United Hospital System. Very fine place.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate your time.
You make us legitimate. We appreciate you.
Troy McDonald, again, thank you so much for the buttons. As always, thanks for listening.
No sugar tonight in my coffee. No sugar tonight in my tea. No sugar to stand beside me. No sugar to run with me.
Support for WGTD comes from Carthage College, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. More information is available online at carthage.edu/grad.
Support comes from the Bristol Renaissance Fair. Eat, drink, and be merry. Succulent treats, sinful sweets, dashing and clashing nights, music and laughter. The Bristol Renaissance Fair is open weekends through Labor Day, located just west of I-94 near the state line.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, Chuck Wolbers, a special education teacher with Kenosha Unified Successful Transitions for Exceptional Students Program, and Steve Brown, assistant professor of educational leadership at UW Oshkosh. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Saturday morning here on WGTD. The program is Education Matters. My name is Mike Keogh, and I have a rather easy job today because I have two very eloquent, energized, and motivated people who are my guests this morning. And why don't you introduce yourselves so that people will recognize your voice?
I'm Chris Allen. I'm the executive director of the Kenosha County Historical Society.
And my name is John Collins. I was active in local politics for a few years.
And you're well known as an expert on and a passionate person with a passionate interest in Kenosha.
I enjoy the history of our community. We have a very interesting place that we live, and there's a lot of history here, and it's good to maintain that and pass it on to the next generation.
And we want to talk about the importance of that history and what the History Center is doing to preserve it, and museums are educational institutions. It's important that the community know about that history, and so we'll talk about some of the outreach things that they're doing, and the outreach or the oral history project we're starting, and the events of this coming week in the Kenosha Homecoming. To start it off, I'll share something with you, John, that I was telling Chris about this morning, and that is, you know, I teach summer school, and between the morning, the two groups in the morning, I was talking to a teacher who's been here about 6 years or so, and she was saying, you know, I've been here 6 years, and I just can't get quite a handle on what Kenosha is, she said. She said, Kenosha seems to me to be a community in search of itself. And I immediately thought of your comments that we have on the tape that we play for people who are new to the museum, of what Kenosha is and what Kenosha should know about itself.
Well, I don't know if it's accurate that we're in search of ourselves. It may be accurate that we're in a state of transition. It may not be clear what the transition is going to lead to. This community was a manufacturing community forever and ever. For most of its life, we were a community that made things. We were a community that manufactured and moved products out. Gosh, from the days when they were making cheese boxes here and putting them on boats and shipping them back east, until we were making cars. Now we're making. They're going to be making candy out in the industrial park here. We've always made things, but when we lost the our major manufacturing employers, as occurred all over the Midwest, it really changed the dynamic of our community. So we're moving into a community that consists of smaller manufacturing businesses. We still do a lot of manufacturing here, but it's on a smaller scale. We are also a community that is attached to Chicago a great deal, and We're kind of a bedroom community. If you want to stand out on I-94 and Highway 50, don't stand there too long. You're able to get run over. But if you do that in the morning, you can find all sorts of vehicles going out to the interstate and making a southward turn. So we've changed who we are, but we always change who we are. We're not the same community that started here, by the founders back in the 1800s, nor should we be. So every community changes, and we're in the process of changing from what we were when I was a kid growing up here to what the new kids are going to live in, and that's normal.
Yeah, and at the History Center, I think we do a great job of honoring Kenosha's past. I mean, in the Rambler Gallery, and that's named for the first car that was made here in town, and actually they were making bikes before they were making cars here. But in the Rambler Gallery, we have a great exhibit called The Lost Industries, and that's really what that whole exhibit, takes a look at. And it's, the industrialization of Kenosha, and now since then the deindustrialization. And it hasn't deindustrialized, all the way, but it's certainly not what it used to be.
I think one of the things that always concerns me is people tend to live in their own bubble. They tend to live in their own time, as is appropriate, and they go to the school down the street and they do whatever they're going to do in their lives. But it's very helpful to understand what life was like before there was a McDonald's on the corner and whatever else the community has become. And one of the things I like about the History Center is when you go there, you see examples of people, you see photographs of people working. And understanding what life was like for most people in Kenosha, Wisconsin, back in my generation or the generation before, I think is very helpful in understanding who we are as a people, because we were immigrants who came here from either down south, up north, or foreign countries, moved into Kenosha to get jobs putting together cars or stretching brass or doing any number of other things. And the life that was led by people in that generation is entirely different than the life that people are living now. It's helpful to understand that continuity and how life has changed, and it helps us build for a future and be well known and understand who we are as families and what our predecessors, our parents, our grandparents lived like. It gives us a foundation, I think, for making up our minds about what we're going to do.
I think what John was just saying, too, it ties right in with the Kenosha County Historical Society's mission statement, and that's to preserve the past to teach the future. And that's something that we're always trying to do more of, and we bring in outside groups and different schools into the museum, and we lead them on tours through the Yesteryear Gallery, where we talk about early settlement, when the first Yankee settlers got here in 1835, and then all the way up until, like I said, industrialization in the mid-1870s, although there were giant manufacturers here prior to that, and then through the present day. And these kids, they're awestruck at the cars that are on the floor of the History Center. I said, these were actually made here? This is amazing. And it's just something that's very fascinating.
I think that what I find fascinating is we haven't manufactured a car here since 1989. So people over those last 20-some years haven't got any concept of what we made here. And when they go down to the History Center, or they go to this event we're going to have in a week or so, and look and understand what was manufactured here, that people in our community living in the houses that other people are living in now in Kenosha, Wisconsin, manufactured these automobiles, and they were delivered all over the world, and they were spectacular. And you look at them and say, my gosh, we made those here? Did we make those cars here, those 1958 Ramblers? And we've lost the connection of that, but the History Center is doing a really good job in helping us.
Well, and what's really neat for us, too, it's the experience. So sometimes we have young grandfathers coming in or grandmothers coming in with their grandchildren or their sons and daughters, and they're saying, hey, look, I worked on the line. I built this car. And the pride that you hear in their voice and, you know, it gives the sense or it gives the family it's almost like a shrine to come back to or you know, I don't know the best word to say it, but there's definitely a pride there. And that's not, you know, 7 out of 10 people, I would say, that come through the History Center, they have some kind of connection to the local industries that were once there. You know, the other 3 out of 10, they're probably not from Kenosha, to be honest.
And that's, I wanted to comment on that because there's a phrase that Faulkner used to use. He said, the past has never passed. Some of it is still going on, and some of it hasn't happened yet. If you want to understand the transition that Kenosha is going through, you need to understand that the buildings may be gone in which the cars were made or which the wire rope was made, but the people who worked there are still here. Their sons and daughters are still here. The politics of Kenosha is still the politics of a union town in many, many ways. The loyalties to party loyalties and so on.
Well, you know, besides the politics, what I enjoy are the stories and people sitting down over a cup of coffee, talking and explaining how they ended up in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Why are you here? How did you end up here? Well, you ended up here because my father needed a job. I talked to a friend of mine who was Lithuanian, and his this wonderful story about moving to Canada and then moving from Canada here because there was a small group of Lithuanians here, and he came here with the man came here with his family, went over to McQuaid Wire Rope because there was a Lithuanian guy there who he knew, and they ended up working there for the next 35 years. All of these stories are so fascinating to me because they tell the life story of our community and the people who have lived here. And we're in the process of making history now. It isn't end. History doesn't end tomorrow morning, one would hope. You know, but this is a continuum of change, just like changes were made in the 1920s. We're making changes now, but it's a fascinating thing to understand, and I think it's very important that school children understand what life was like before they were here.
Well, and one of the things, too, that we talk about when we do bring school children in is things have always been changing. You know, we talked about the bicycles a little bit earlier. At one point, they didn't know what an automobile was. And the bicycles were here. At one time, we had a very large tannery. It was one of the largest in the whole country. And the tannery went out of business because of the rise of the automobile. Their largest product was horse harnesses. So, you know, by the 1920s, the Allen Tannery, they went out of business. And then we had this very large car company here in town. And it's just the rise of different industries. Oh. You know, it was Bain Wagon before there was bicycles here. So, you know, we could talk about from Bain to Rambler, then, you know, the rise of the automobile.
Well, and Kenosha started as a small maritime community, maritime port. Didn't really take off as a manufacturing community until Milwaukee and Chicago Railroad came through in 1854, and then it really, really exploded.
All right. Well, it was able to bring in raw materials, and then they'd use the port to ship out the finished good. And you can examine, you know, towns across America, and it's a very similar story. And that's why I think a lot of people do come to Kenosha, and they come to the Kenosha History Center, and they say, you know, I'm not from Kenosha, but this is really like my town. Mm-hmm. And that's why we say that Kenosha History Center is basically a case study for a lot of other towns in America. You know, Kenosha, we were a small farming town. Okay, industry came here. Zalman Simmons was able to attract the Chicago brass here. Once the brass came here, bang. You know, we had giant industries wanting to come close to that brass alloy so that they could get the product for cheap. They're able to make more money. And, you know, because of Kenosha's port here being connected to the rest of the world through the St. Lawrence Seaway, they're able to ship that product around the world. And that's why we say, you know, Kenosha is a case study for the rest of America. We've industrialized. Now we've since, like I said, somewhat deindustrialized, and we're in the same position as a lot of people are.
The story of Simmons and how he came to how did this whole industry grow up here? And some lost kid basically ended up here and ended up getting a job in some little store downtown and ended up two decades later being a major manufacturer. The same with Charlie Nash, who came through General Motors, but it was the same sort of arrangement. This was a farm kid who needed some money, and he and William Durant went into partnership and started this little business. He ended up here as the richest guy in town by far. Had this major manufacturing operation which he ran for decades here. So we've got all of those really good stories, and you know, you could take any one of those and you could write a Hollywood script and you could put it on television and you could say that would be an interesting story. That would be something interesting to sit and watch for an hour. We don't have that capacity to do so, but the History Center is giving us snippets of that so we can use our imagination to put those stories together.
Most people who know about the History Center know about the museum, and that's the History Center to them. But you do a lot in the way of archives and finding and preserving this history.
Sure. Well, like I said, going back to our mission, our mission is to preserve the past to teach the future. So that first part there is preserving the past. So, you know, we can't preserve something unless it's brought to us. So, you know, we're looking to preserve the cultural, the social, industrial history of Kenosha, all of the history of Kenosha. And what we say, we're not preserving our history. We're preserving your history. And history is all around us. And a lot of people think history, you know, it's some textbook that they read in school and it's boring. But, you know, there's history of baseball here in Kenosha. There's history of these factories that we're talking about. Really, everybody's interested in something, and there's a history behind that something. And that's what we like to curate over at the History Center. You know, obviously there's spatial limitations for what we can do and what we can collect. But we our mission is to preserve everybody's story. And not only the elitists, like we were talking about Charles Nash and Zalman Simmons, but the factory workers that were working right in the Simmons factory and the Nash factory.
And how did they come here? That's how my family came here. My family came here because my uncle came down here to start looking for a job and working. We lived up in northern Wisconsin. My uncle came down and got a job at the Nash factory. Then the rest of the family followed, and us with them. My mom and dad, and we all lived in the same sort of neighborhood, and everybody worked at the plant, as we called it. Everybody worked at the plant, and we had a good life.
One of the things that interested me when I moved to Kenosha in 1970 was the immigrant history of Kenosha and the fact that Kenosha was a number of neighborhoods which were originally established around a particular ethnic group, and I was especially interested in the fact that there's a Russian Orthodox church here.
Right. So our communities were generally focused around a church. So you had an Italian church, and you had a Lithuanian church, and you had a German church. And those communities lived, and a Polish church, of course, St. Casimir's. So you had these communities that grew up, and they built their own ethnic Catholic church. And those lasted for many decades before that washed away as those communities were absorbed into the larger community and lost their identity.
And if you go over to Columbus Park to the farmers market on Saturday morning, you can still find elderly women with accents arguing with the farmers over the price of a cucumber.
Right. And they win.
Yeah, they probably do win. At this point, we could probably mention the fact that there's a small group of former employees at American Motors with family histories going back a couple generations, who are starting an oral history project, mm-hmm. and will be I'll be working with them, and we will be recording the stories of people who worked or whose grandparents worked and or have stories about a favorite automobile. I wish some of my ancestors from northern Wisconsin who always drove Ramblers, I wish some of them were around to tell some of their stories.
Well, in our neighborhood, it was an interesting things that happened. When the factory was selling a lot of cars and things were busy, everybody was working. There was a lot of money flowing around, and then when times got bad and the cars weren't selling, things slowed down. There were big layoffs, and the community was sort of decimated. People packed up their houses, packed up their, if they were renting apartments, packed up their stuff and moved. And they would be, many people never considered themselves Kenoshans. They consider themselves people from northern Wisconsin, where I was from, or from somewhere down south. And they would pack up and move and until they got recalled back to work, and they would then come back and stay here for a while. But their intention was never to stay here. But many of them did, and many of them left their children and their grandchildren here. And so they ended up being part of this community, and many of them still are.
I'll send you a copy of a photograph that I shared with Chris earlier this week. I'm from Marinette, Menominee originally. Mm-hmm. The photograph is of the Sunday-only Shoreland 400, which originated in Marinette, Menominee, and came down to Chicago. The last coach on that train was always for American Motors workers. Mm-hmm. There were 25 or 30 guys who worked in town, who would rent a place, and four of them would stay in a place. And when there were layoffs or on weekends, they'd take the train back up north and do other jobs or work on their farms or whatever. But there were enough of them that the train crew always set aside the last coach for American Motors workers.
I mean, these were great-paying jobs. There were jobs that you could graduate high school, you could go into the factory, you know, especially if your father or grandfather had worked there. And it's there these legacy jobs that you knew that they were going to be here in Kenosha. You'd work, it'd be, you know, there's that saying, it's 30 and out. You'd work in 30 years, you'd get your pension. It'd be one-worker households, and they were able to support a family on those jobs.
And a lot of people move to Kenosha, get a job at American Motors. And they would build up enough of a nest egg that then they would retire and go back to wherever they came from and live like a king, because they were getting a nice pension from the factory, and they were living in their home communities where they came from.
And the jobs were foundation jobs, because they were the basis on which the children would go to college or be a dowry for a marriage
And that caused problems throughout the rest of the community, because people would be laid off. They didn't have a job. They would go start looking for a job somewhere else. They would find employment in a small business and get trained to do whatever they were supposed to be doing in the other business. A year later, they get called back at the salary that was double what they were making in the small business. So these small business people used to just pull their hair out, because they couldn't keep employees. They couldn't pay enough to be competitive with American Motors. But they would hire people who were laid off, and then they would end up being short-termers. And there was a lot of friction that went on through the rest of the business community, because American Motors was paying so much more than everybody else was paying.
Maybe there's some lessons to be learned. I don't know what the lessons are, but why didn't Kenosha become a Detroit or a Belvedere or some other community?
Well, we don't want to do a comparison with Detroit necessarily.
I mean, do the comparison with the city and so on. But we managed in Kenosha, and you were the county executive at the time a lot of this was taking place.
Well, we managed
to make some adjustments.
We made a determination when it was clear Chrysler then owned the company that they were pulling out, except for the engine manufacturing. We made a conscious decision that we were not going to be one of those communities that was just devastated. So we worked with them. There's the piece of land, they tore down all those buildings, which would have, could you imagine what Kenosha would look like if you had 100 acres of rotting factory buildings in the middle of the community that we couldn't figure out what to do with, that somebody had to pay for? They took those down. They also took the buildings downtown down, and those are this beautiful development there. We were very careful in planning and working with the company that was leaving and with the employees of the company to try to create a new Kenosha, and we did that. And there are some vast losses. I mean, we do not have the salaries that we had. We do not have jobs that pay what they used to pay. But we do have a community that's prosperous and thriving.
And again, you know, using Kenosha as a case study for the rest of America, I think that's a very similar story all across America. And, you know, the rise of automation. So even if the factories were still here, you know, because of technology and because of, you know, we're not going to have at the peak of AMC, we were employing, correct me if I'm wrong, close to 15,000.
Yes, over 14,000.
Yeah,
people.
And you know, even if we had AMC still here or Chrysler or whoever you want to call it, it's not going to have that many jobs because of automation.
If you take a look at the picture in my mind, can you see that? It's a picture in my mind. If you take a look at that, you would see a bunch of my neighbors working on the line in 1957 making cars. There were hundreds of people lined up, each one putting a different bolt on, doing a different little part of the construction process of this car. It isn't that way anymore. Now we move forward to a period of time when this sheet of metal comes down and these giant robots take it and twist it and turn it and punch it, and now we've got a car frame and the body and the engine goes in, and it takes very few people. The general rule now is if you are working at a job that is rote, routine, repetitive, that job isn't going to be there. It's not going to be filled by somebody in China. It's more apt now to be filled with a machine. So that would have had, you are absolutely correct, if the motors had stayed here and it was still making, you know, the number of cars we were making, we would have done that with a significantly smaller workforce in a new, smaller, shinier building.
One of the other interesting things is, you know, we talk about these industrialists, Zalman Simmons and Charles Nash, and we're talking about one person. Mm-hmm. And now we're talking about companies, yeah. And now we're talking about big, shareholders and stockholders, and, you know, we need profit, year-over-year profit every single year. Well, there was years here, and as you mentioned, you know, where Charles Nash didn't make a dime. And Zalman Simmons, you know, maybe we didn't make as much as we did last year, but they were still giving out Christmas bonuses, and they're still taking care of their people. There's the Kenosha Club. There were, you know, we had company outings, and I think a lot of that culture, that company culture, has changed over the years.
Well, it's gone because now we are. Don't get me started on that, but it's all a larger international corporate structure where everybody is fighting on Wall Street for a return on investment, and you can't put up with some of the stuff that you used to. You can't be as generous as you used to, and it's a whole different universe and everything. You look back at how the world used to be, and my children have heard that all their lives, and now it's my grandchildren's time, I guess. But how things used to be, and it changes. It's all different. And it helps to have a historical perspective when you are making any kind of decisions. It helps to understand how we got here so we can better understand where we ought to be going.
One of the things that is motivating some of these guys who want to participate in this oral history project is we've got lots of information about Charles Nash and Zalman Simmons. Mm-hmm. And we don't have so much information about all the people who made the products in their factories. And we want to get that story while those folks are still around.
Right. There are a lot of people around whose parents, there are few people around anymore who actually did this stuff. Now they're getting very old. But there are people around who remember what life was like living in the shadow of either the Brass or American Motors or one of those, the entire community revolved around those institutions. And so there are a lot of people around yet. So I think gathering and doing interviews with some of them would be very helpful.
There's a fellow who's on Facebook, lives in Milwaukee. He's on Facebook, and he's trying to get together the group of guys that who's were with him when their first jobs were bolting the seats in the back seats of Gremlins.
Right.
And he wants to get them all together during the homecoming week here for dinner so they can all talk about where those jobs led them to, you know, provided the base for them to go on to college in his case and become a teacher. And
well, when I was a kid, the goal of every red-blooded young fellow that went to school with me was to get a job at the Motors because it paid well. And you could live a relatively good life working at the Motors.
And so we don't run out of time before we start talking about the homecoming week. This has grown over that. There have been two previous ones, is that it?
And this actually, is going to be the... There's been a few previous ones. We've had a little bit more than two. We started these in the late 90s, actually, and then we've continued them every 3 years. I would say our biggest turnout was in 2002 for the centennial year of the Jeffrey automobile. They started making cars here in 1902, and in 2002 we had a heck of a turnout for that show. This year it's a similar type of celebration because it's the centennial.
It's 110 years.
Well, it's 110 years for Jeffrey, but it's also the 100 year for Nash because Nash started making automobiles here in 1917. So in 2017 we celebrate that 100 year and not only welcome back all the Nashes, but then all the AMCs as well, because without Nash, there would not have been an American Motors. That merger in 1954 between Nash Kelvinator Corporation and the Hudson Motor Car Company, that's what formed American Motors. And, you know, they were here, like John said, until 1987 when Chrysler took them over, and really probably after the Jeep name, because right. AMC had acquired Jeep by that point. So this celebration next week, and we're going to have events across town Tuesday through Saturday with the big show culminating on Saturday at Kennedy Park, it's a chance for us to welcome back all these cars to Kenosha, welcome them home. And that's why we call it the Kenosha Homecoming Car Show. But it's a great chance not only for the owners of those vehicles to see where they came from, but it's also a chance for the workers to then see the cars that they turned the wrench on or you know, installed the seat in the Gremlin, like you said, Mike. And it's just a great week of festivities. You can't ignore it because, you know, we have 10,000 people coming into town and, you know, several hundred vehicles that will be driving the streets of Kenosha. And it'll feel like we're back in the 1960s and 1970s.
My favorite part of that show, the last time I was at one, was the over in Kennedy Park. Before the actual event started, there was this sort of rummage sale.
Yep. And
what
we,
did you call that?
We call it the swap meet.
So I went over there, and it was such fun just walking through. They had these people with tables, and on the tables were car parts, some of which I recognized and some of which I crawled under my own car and put in years ago. And I ended up bringing home a bunch of Nash wheel covers, you know. And in fact, I got one on my deck as a decorative piece, this little wheel cover that says Nash. I mean, you know, they just have all these bizarre things. And as an owner of a number of vehicles, including my 1968 and my 1971 Javelins, it just makes me gives me a whole warm feeling to walk through there and see all of that stuff.
It's really a neat event. And that takes place, the swap meet takes place from 8 a.m. until 1 p.m. on Friday, and then it's all day Saturday as well. So from 8 a.m. until 4 p.m. on Saturday. And that swap meet, it's one of our big draws.
Need a hubcap for a Nash, they got it.
Exactly. A few years ago, we actually had a group of gentlemen that came over from Australia. And that's why it's such a big draw, because, okay, if I'm in Australia, I can't find an American Motors part. If I'm in New York City, you know, it's hard enough, but it's really just a huge draw from all over the world. These car parts aren't being produced anymore, but there are a lot here in Kenosha and from around the world that come here over the course of the week. And like I said, it's just a really fun time, great festivities, something that we're doing new this year because downtown is tore up, and we usually do a downtown car night on Friday night, but we're doing a cruise down 60th Street, and it's starting at Nash Park at 4 p.m. on Friday afternoon, and it's going to culminate at the Kenosha History Center, and it will be the Kenosha History Center Block Party, and we're going to have, you know, close to 400, if not more, cars there that night. And on the south side of the harbor, there's Taste of Wisconsin. A lot going on at
the
lakefront.
It'll be a busy weekend.
It'll be a fun weekend. Yeah,
my Kiwanis Club puts on the Taste of Wisconsin. And what we've noticed is when that coincides with your homecoming, we sell a lot more beer. Sure. Maybe just an accident, but I'm thinking there's a pattern here.
Sure. I'm sure you'll have similar results this year.
I'm thinking back to the last one. I didn't see a single Alliance or Fuego in the automobiles that returned to Kenosha. Do you think we're likely to see?
I know that we'll have at least one. There's a gentleman that has a 1987 Alliance here. It's a convertible. They only made the convertibles here in Kenosha. And he has a funny story. He said when the French engineers came over to Kenosha and they saw the convertible, they nearly had a heart attack because they knew about the Alliance, but they didn't know about the convertible. And they said, oh, what is that? But it was a really good selling car. It'll be powder blue, and it will be on the show field on Saturday.
But when I think of that homecoming, I'm thinking about the 1950s cars with those bizarre colors, the 60s cars into the 70s. Those were unique, very special vehicles.
Thinking about my 61 Classic that was institutional beige.
Why would you do that?
I didn't buy it new.
So I should have had it painted one of those powder blue or pink. Or I had a 19 at one point. It was a used car, which we won't get into. My dad bought it for me. It was a used 1958 Nash, and it had those wings on the back.
Yes.
and a Continental kit and a push button automatic transmission.
Had a push button. Yeah.
There were a whole bunch of bad ideas in one vehicle.
Yeah, AMC, and we joke about it when we have some visitors at the History Center. It's like they weren't ahead of their time, they weren't behind their time, they just weren't in their time.
They just weren't in their time.
they did a lot of different things and had a lot of neat ideas.
I would not say that they were always out of their time, because every time I look on the floor of our main exhibit, and I see that Rambler American there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a classic vehicle. It was it was well engineered. It was targeted at a very practical market to be an inexpensive but nice car. And it's beautifully styled. The styling is timeless.
One of the things that I like about what you folks have done there at the History Center is to get some of the advertising. Because as precious as those vehicles are, the advertising that makes them look even better.
Absolutely,
it's remarkable. The posters, the magazine full page spreads are just beautiful.
Yeah, when they teamed up with Levi and they came out with the Levi Gremlin.
Oh yes,
that was a neat one. And yeah, for the homecoming car show next week, we've really pulled a lot of neat things out of our archives. We put them on display for everybody to see. So we encourage people not only to come to the car show, but to come down to the History Center, walk through. We have our current exhibit. It's Cars of the Decade. So starting out with that 1902 Rambler and then all the way up through our 1972 Gremlin that's on display. But it's a really nice time to kind of go back in time and reminisce.
And if you're looking for something interesting to give yourself a chuckle, if you go on the computer and go on YouTube and look through some of the AMC TV commercials that were on at the time, those are all kind of cool to look at.
Ed McMahon, we've got the Pacer.
Yeah, we've got the Pacer. I had one.
I'm sorry.
We don't want to go into that. That was a the Pacer
gets a bad rap.
All of the decisions that I've made in my life, that was one of the least good ones I made.
As I understand it, it was put into production before the design was really finalized.
We could spend an hour talking about what was wrong with that.
We'll have a gentleman in town next week. He's a producer out of Pennsylvania. He actually did a short documentary. It's called The Unfortunate History of the AMC Pacer. And he'll be at the show on Friday night answering questions about that film. But And not only are, you know, we're hoping that we can get that film on display because we're going to have a big screen out for the block party on Friday night, but we're sure that we're going to be showing the movie Cars as well. So it's a great event not only for, you know, pure car enthusiasts and Kenoshans, but anybody, the whole family, bring them on down on Friday night for the car show, see the classic cars in Kenosha, but then come and watch the classic movie Cars as well.
Okay, well, we're down to about a bit under 5 minutes. I wonder if there's anything that either of you think we may have missed or that you'd like to add to what we've talked about.
Kenosha is a very dynamic community. It's a fun place. It's a great place to live, and we always say it's a great to live because it's halfway between Chicago and Milwaukee. For me, it's a great place to live because it's my hometown, and my family has grown up here. All my brothers and my sisters are here, and there's so much. When I drive, I don't have to go somewhere else for nostalgia. I could just drive a few blocks to where I went to high school or a few blocks to where I used to live, because there's so much that's happened here. The folks who came here to get a job and made their lives here, set down roots in this community, from the rich guys who came here and brought their industries or created industries here, to the folks who were sweeping out the shop floor. All of them were part of our community, and they all brought things here, and they've all helped make this a much different community than it once was. But the thing I like about Kenosha that's tied into our history is it's such a great family town. How many people do you know here that are related to 50 other people that you know that aren't related, and you're not related to them, because there are these large extended families in our community that give it a very much of a hometown feel, a lot of hometown folks, and they all came here from someplace else, or their grandparents came here from somewhere else, and added a flavor and a dynamism to the community that make it what it is today. This is a great town. We sometimes forget that because we live here and we say, but it's a great town. It's a great town because we've got things that no one else has.
And you can hear it in John's voice there. It's the pride that this town has. And we see it every day at the museum when we have families come in. They're proud of what they made. They're proud of this town, what it is, you know, the whole fabric of the town. But going back to the car show, the AMC Homecoming Car Show, if people are interested in learning a little bit more about that, we have a website, www.kenoshahistorycenter.com. We have a event link on there where you can click, and we have a flyer with all the times for the different stuff around the town that week. We'll have some cruising nights. We have a cruising night at Wendy's. We'll have a cruising night at Andy's. There's a great event going on at the UAW on Wednesday night that we're doing some raffles for some local charities over there. On Friday, there's a really cool event in the morning, not only the swap meet that we just talked about, but the Gremlins over at Jeffrey's School, because they're the home of the Gremlins. So there's a contingent that's going to be meeting at the swap meet, driving their Gremlins over to Jeffrey's School, taking a tour of the school. Later that afternoon at Nash School, we're going to be doing an ice cream social from 1 to 3 o'clock. And then, as I mentioned before as well, we'll be doing our big car parade going down 60th Street, starting off at 4 o'clock and then leading to the History Center, where we have our nighttime, the viewing of the cars and the Kenosha History Center block party. And then with it all culminating on Saturday at Kennedy Park from 8 a.m. till 4 p.m., and that's the big car show. But like I said, if you have any questions, you can always go to our website, KenoshaHistoryCenter.com, or excuse me, .org, and we're also very active on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Kenosha History Center, on Twitter, at Kenosha History, and you can always give us a call, too, and our number is 262-654-5770.
Okay, my comment short. First, I'll add that there'll be information about the Oral History Project showing up there as well. For people who want to get involved in that. But, John, you on the piece that we show on the rotating device at the History Center, you end by saying, what was Kenosha?
We make stuff.
And that's true. But we're still around, because Kenoshans are survivors.
Oh, yeah.
This community is a survivor.
Well, you know, we were a manufacturing town. We're from the time they were making bean wagons and all of that till now. We were a manufacturing town, but we've changed in what we do and how we do it.
Okay, with that, we'll have to wrap it up. Thank you, John Collins and Chris Allen. My name is Mike Keough. I'm one of the rotating hosts here. We have, I think we have five hosts at the present time, and we rotate to give you a little variety. I can't tell you who's on next week or what the topic is, but please tune in again next week at 10:30 on Saturday morning. Also, this program is streamed on the Internet, WGTD.org. Also, if you know someone who didn't hear the show because this was an inconvenient time, you can access the program anytime, day or night, for from here into eternity on the WGTD.org website. So with that, thank you, gentlemen, and hope to see you all next week.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive.